A rare python, believed to have inspired the rainbow serpent of Aboriginal mythology, is being saved from extinction by a Northern Territory reptile expert. Dr. Gavin Bedford has spent more than a decade trying to catch, breed and raise the Owen Pelly python. He's finally had some success, with the first two Owen Pelly pythons to be legally bred in captivity. It's part of a private sector-led project to protect Owen Pelly pythons under threat from environmental loss and to provide an economic opportunity for West Arnhem Land traditional owners. Gavin Bedford spoke to our reporter, Cathy Van Exdell.
An Owen Pelly python is a 5-metre snake, probably for its length the thinnest snake on the planet. It almost looks like an extended worm. It has two coliforms, and that depends on the time of the day. So the first coliform is very drab brown, with darker, more chocolate brown blotches over it. But then what happens at night is they change colour to a silver or ghostly silver white with almost purple blotching in it. So it's a pretty striking animal when it's fully lit up at night and stretched out across a rock or whatever.
What do they eat?
Whatever they can come across. A lot of the research seems to suggest that they're eating fruit bats or bats. They live in the rocky escarpment country of East Kakadu, West Arnhem. That's about 140 to 240 metres tall escarpment country of sandstone. And in those caves in that system, they have many, many different types of bats. And right next to the escarpment, they have the big fields of native palms that have fruit on them and other fruiting trees that the bats are attracted to, and then the snakes are attracted to the bats. That's the theory anyway. You know, I've spent thousands of hours looking for this thing, and I've found two in 12 years of looking. So either I'm not very good at it, although I've seen a couple of hundred other pythons, either I'm not very good at it or they're really not that common.
And what do we know about its ties to Aboriginal mythology?
Depending on where the Aboriginal person lives, there are a number of animals that are seen as the rainbow serpents. They create the landscape, they give rise to fertility. There's a whole heap of different things. And the Owen Pelly python, even Aboriginal people today, see it as a sort of almost a semi-mythical creature in itself, in that it's very rarely seen. So for them, because of its length and its rarity, it can be construed as the true rainbow serpent. However, the people that live on the flat country around the billabongs and things like that also see the same thing in water pythons.
Now, you mentioned that it's a very rare reptile. Is it also a species in trouble?
I think it is, and for a number of reasons. Professor John Winowski has been doing research in Kakadu and a little bit in Arnhem Land for the last 30 years when he worked for Parks and Wildlife Northern Territory, and he found that we've lost about 70% of species in Kakadu, and we've lost, in terms of small mammals, and we've lost about 85% of biomass. And when you think that small mammals are a food source for big predators like the pythons, and their food source is declining rapidly, then it stands to reason that the predator itself must be in decline.
So you've been concentrating on the Owen Pelly now for more than a decade, haven't you?
I have, yes.
And what is it that you're trying to achieve?
A couple of things. Just raise the profile of the plight of Kakadu animals and Arnhem Land animals. I guess that's first and foremost. Work with Aboriginal people to say to the wider community that they actually have resources that are valuable, and we don't just take them. I'm working with Aboriginal people. This is a very scarce resource. It's only found on Aboriginal land. So I'm working with Aboriginal partners to bring that into captivity so that the black market in this particular animal is no longer there, which it has been for an awful long time, that the Aboriginal people can see that they are my partners and we rise and fall on the whims of supply and demand, I guess, and that they benefit if this process goes ahead.
So how are you involving the local Aboriginal traditional owners?
Well, up until now, when I've gone hunting, a number of them have come out with me looking, and I pay them for that. They get paid incredibly well for each animal that I collect, and I have six adults. But they also will, in perpetuity, get royalties from the sale of the youngsters. But the other thing that goes with this, and this is hopefully something that people will value, is that the people that I'm working with are prepared to say, the animal that you're buying has come from my country. So essentially, they have assigned it to you as its custodian. And so as a purchaser of one of these animals, if we ever get to that, and I'd like to think that we will, then you actually have a connection with these people as well.
So you're aiming for a bigger breeding program. You've just successfully bred the first two legally in
Yes.
captivity. But that's been quite a process in itself. It's been quite a journey, hasn't it?
It sure has. It's been somewhere between 10 and 15 years, depending on when you see the start date. Even the breeding of two is a start. Unfortunately, the clutch size was 17, and of those, 15 were infertile eggs. So there were only two eggs that were fertile. But again, from an animal from the wild, you expect some level of stress, and that's a big thing with reptiles. So hopefully, after breeding these two, I'm sort of on the way to getting to that point where they will produce lots of fertile clutches of eggs and we can move forward.
What are your hopes now with the breeding program? That obviously that it picks up in pace?
Definitely picks up in pace. That the general public see what it's doing. But for a number of years, we've been forbidden from exporting any native Australian animal overseas for commercial gain. And that's essentially just made sure, it's almost sanctioning a black market in Australian wildlife. I think that's really got to change. I mean, we're a long way down the track. We breed animals incredibly well here, so why should some other country benefit through a black market system with our animals? And so if the Aboriginal people are going to fully get the rewards from this particular resource, then if we can export it to the world as well, then they will benefit.
What do we know about the black market, particularly for this python?
For this python, who knows? Oh, black market's a black market for a reason. All I know is that every time I talk to someone from law enforcement in any of the wildlife agencies around Australia, they always say that it's big, it's growing, and essentially there's nothing particularly they can do about it. And with this particular animal, I'm trying to say that every animal that we've got is DNA marked. Every animal comes with a certificate of ownership from the Aboriginal people. So why shouldn't they benefit from the resource that they've got?
Is there much demand for this type of python?
The crystal ball. I'm not sure. I'd like to think there is. You know, I didn't actually go into it necessarily for the money. It's a 5-metre snake. So how many people want a 5-metre snake in their front room or whatever? It's an interesting animal. It's got a lot of mystique, but there are a lot of other animals that are, especially people that keep reptiles, there are a lot of other very pretty reptiles on the market. However, if we go through the fact that it comes from an area that is no one's allowed to go because it's owned by Aboriginal people, then maybe people will see how special this particular animal is. I mean, I love it. I think it's an amazing critter, and it does some things that no other python does, like it just never hides. You know, most pythons like to hide in cracks or crevices or logs in trees or whatever, but this thing just sits out, sitting on a rock, doing whatever they do, which isn't much.
Herpetologist Gavin Bedford, who's become the first to legally breed in captivity one of the nation's rainbow serpents. He was speaking to Kathy Van Extel. And Natasha Mitchell, a herpetologist, that could be our word for the day, is someone who specialises in the study of reptiles and amphibians, and the word herpetologist comes from the Greek root herpeton, meaning creeping animal. Now, that's our value add for listeners.
I love herpetologists.
What's your value
add? In another
add?
Life, I would have done zoology. And when I was
really?
Doing engineering at uni, I tried to actually get into zoology and do engineering. It's a combined degree, zoology, engineering. No one understood why.
No.
They all said, no, the only options are you go and do commerce and engineering, you know.
And so you were denied. Dug a hole and found a lizard. At the same time.
I really did have that conversation with my university, but anyway, that just
glad
didn't.
They talked you out of it.
No, I'm not. I'd be
life?
Out there tracking reptiles now in the desert somewhere.
While building bridges.
Well, that's right.